Shawinga back to Hutton. Hutton, edge of the area. Shawinga, a ball up. There's a goal for the home team. Dominio, welcome back.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I'm Andre Carlisle. It's been a minute, y'all. I'm here with my co-host, Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
How I always am. I'm tired.
Well, yes. On the scale of tired, are you tired? Real tired? Exhausted? Defeated? I need y'all to drop in reviews. I need y'all to drop some levels of tired. We need to go through this every single episode.
You know, there was a certain point in the Chelsea match today on the women's side that I felt a little defeated. But I just had a snack. So I'm going to go just a traditional tired.
Okay. Snacks help. Shout out to snacks.
Not the podcast, RIP.
RIP to that podcast. Oh, I'm so sad. I am liking good vibes, but it is not quite the same just yet. But it is good. And Becky Sauerbrunn's always fun to listen to. So I do kind of dig it.
Oh, yeah. Becky is great. I'm obsessed. Pretty sure. She's great.
All right, so we have a lot of stuff to get into, as we usually do when we skip a week. So I'm going to keep this part of the podcast short. And instead of a review, Courtney has promised me that she has a joke. So I am going to prepare myself and get out of the way for this.
This joke is so good. It is in Spanish. I can tell it in English after, but you should be able to get it in Spanish. And it's actually from a TikTok. Well, no, it's not. It was an Instagram reel that I saw that I was, I don't know if you've noticed our Instagram in the last like 4 days, but it was hilarious. And I posted it on there. So, okay.
¿De dónde vienen los hamsters?
¿De dónde? Wow.
Did you get it?
Este buenísimo.
No, you have to recount it.
Okay, wait, ready? Wait, hold up. Oh my God, I feel like such a boomer. It's because I'm trying to restart it over. All right, wait, hold up.
¿De dónde vienen los hamsters?
¿De dónde? Wow.
Did you get it this time?
Yeah. I'm still going to need you to translate. I maybe need to see it, but it sounds funny.
It goes, ¿De dónde vienen los hamsters? Just where do the hamsters come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the answer
to them. That's so good. I posted our story. If you go follow me on Instagram, I will repost our story tomorrow. But literally the funniest part about it is like the guy who's telling the joke like can't contain himself. So he literally like whispers Amsterdam. Like he can tell he's laughing so hard. It just comes out as a whisper of Amsterdam. So that's my really funny joke because I saw it in Spanish and I absolutely lost it. And the English translation is, where do hamsters come from? You have to say where. You're muted. You have to say where.
I'm sorry. I was still laughing. Where?
Amsterdam.
Okay. Yeah.
Translation. It's funny in Spanish.
I might need to get the link to that so we can drop it in the show notes because that does sound hilarious. And I'm mad I couldn't really hear it. I just heard laughing and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to laugh right now. But I missed it because of the whisper. So... You know,
the whisper. So I really should have put my phone up to show you while it was happening next to the mic because it is literally so funny. It's one of the I've been showing it to so many people. I'm like, look at this this hilarious dad joke, also in Spanish.
dad jokes are universal.
Dad jokes are universal, but yeah, we'll put it in the show notes because literally the guy cannot contain himself. And then like, cause I guess it's some type of show. And each time the guy comes on with a bad dad joke and everyone is laughing at him because they're like not even laughing at the joke. They're laughing at how hard he's laughing. Cause he like cannot contain himself.
One of my favorite things in life is that laughter is very much contagious. So when you see somebody cracking up, you almost can't help it. And you have no idea why, but it gets it. Giggle fits. They happen. They very much happen.
So he starts laughing before he even tells the joke. Like before it even starts, this guy's cracking up. So it's a good time.
good stuff. Yeah, check the show notes. That'll be in there. Press pause, laugh, and then come back because we have a lot to talk about. We have entry, unfortunately, into the sick and shut-in list. We're going to talk about some news. FIFA's doing some things. The Reggae Girls might be back, caveat. And then we're going to get into some NWSL and then jump over to England because the FA Cup final happened and also the WSL title race is going down to the final day yet again. So, Courtney, anything else before we get started?
Nope.
Okay, let's do it. Sick and shut-in list. This is a sad one, y'all. They're all sad, but this is a sad one. Ari Borges, who is playing for Racing Louisville, was a midfielder last year, was maybe going to get into attack this year because that midfield is like Jalen Howell, Taylor Flint, and Savannah DeMello, like getting
real busy.
Well,
it's not even Jalen Howell right now.
Yeah, Jalen Howell's hurt too.
Been injured.
But yeah, so we got word that Ari Borges had surgery on a meniscus and is going to attempt to come back. And we will hopefully see in a few weeks. Positive news. We haven't seen any her name added to any lists. So that gives us some help, some hope. But yeah, it's kind of real sad because it was a player who balled out last season. I was excited to see her this season.
Yeah, I'm not super surprised about this injury, given that she'd only really featured, there have been eight NWSL match days, and I'm pretty sure, like, she's only featured in, like, one or two of them. She hasn't really been a big part of the squad, and she was previously on the injury list, came back out, and then, obviously, is being put back on the injury list, but the list we were talking about is, like, the D45 or even, knock on wood, like, the SEI season-ending injury list. And in Racing Louisville's press release, they just said she will be recuperating with the squad and not put on either of those lists, which to me is like signals a good sign as opposed to someone like Morgan Weaver, who I'm like, when we saw the injury, I was like, oh, that looks like a serious injury, and she has been put on the D45 list, but hopefully that means she will also come back. But yeah, prayers up for Ari and healing also because the Olympics are coming quick and soon, even though technically, the Olympics don't start till like midway through July.
Yeah.
I know there's like training camps and stuff beforehand, but the Olympics this year are also significantly later than, and actually in the same way of like the World Cup this in 2023 was significantly later, like in the actual calendar. The same for this Olympics as well. They're like pretty late. Like they don't start till really midway through July, like towards the end of July. Don't finish towards the end of August.
Yeah, I was looking at the time frame of the Olympics. I don't remember what date the actual final is on, but I was looking at the Olympics overall, and I was like, okay, wow, going deep into August. I did not expect
that. They're like
that.
Very deep into August. Same with the World Cup too, honestly, because I remember 2019 starting on my birthday. That was like when France kicked off in Paris in 2019, and so I was expecting that for the World Cup in 2023, and they're like, just kidding, we're starting on July 20th. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, little wild. Okay, let's get into a couple bits of news real quick. The Reggae Girls are back, ? You want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, it seems like, so for those who don't know, after their match in September of 2023, their two match window in September of 2023 against Canada to see if they would qualify for the Olympics after coming third in the W Championship and all the way back in 2022, you know, they had this basically two match playoff to see who would get through to the Olympics. The Reggae Girls ended up losing. I believe it was 3-0 on aggregate or something like that. And soon after, a lot of the players, do we know, from that squad, especially those included on the Women's World Cup squad, came out, released a statement against their federation, basically saying, I mean, they alleged a lot of things off the top of my head. They were like, they were talking about just general playing conditions, payments, like also being kind of kept in the loop of things. Like, it seems like when they decided not to renew Lauren Donaldson's contract, like the players basically learned about it at the same time as the rest of us.
Yeah.
Which is not ideal, and definitely not ideal for any type of training environment. So they came out against the federation, and as a result, the majority did not accept call-ups to their subsequent national team windows. That did mean, for example, in the lead-up to the W Gold Cup this past year, that Jamaica did not make it. they were really putting out super young squads. And so now a lot of the World Cup faves are back. The only big name off the top, or the only really big name who's missing is Bunny Shaw, but it's because Bunny Shaw has a broken foot. But yeah, the Reggae girls, they've hopefully, I mean, I haven't seen any reporting or that like the Federation has necessarily conceded anything or something like that, but you kind of get the inkling that since they accepted call-ups to camp in this two-game window, that obviously there's been some sort of progress been made, given that they hadn't accepted a call-up in, what, more than 6 months, almost 9 months since then.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by this, although I would like to know specifics, and I'm assuming we'll hear stuff when players are ready to share it. They have been, and thankfully, they've been vocal about what's been going on with the Federation. As you mentioned, they didn't know much about Lauren and what was happening there, and then there were also just reports of them not really being told where they're going to stay, like where they're going and all of that, in terms of just
very basic,
just really basic information that, like, hey, we have a tournament, do we know where we're staying, do we know where we're playing, do we know where we're training, like what's the itinerary, what are we doing. So I'm hopeful. I don't know. In between that period, we also heard a lot about Sadella Marley and like pulling some of that partnership. All that funding. So like, because we don't have many details at the moment, that's why I framed it as like question mark, asterisks, don't really know what's happening. But you're right, the players being back is a good sign. We'll just have to hear from them what drew them back, or if it's just like, fuck it, we might as well ball. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's that or if they actually got something positive through with the Federation, which is what I obviously hope.
Yeah, there has not been really nearly any reporting about this. So yeah, I guess we're going to learn about it. But yeah, like the fact that they are back in camp when they were, I mean, it seemed like a lot of them were probably just like done with the national team. I'm hoping it's a step in the right direction, but also a good like lesson to live by is like, don't really trust the federations, men's or women's, big or small. Just always take things either with a grain of salt or look with a little bit of an eye of skepticism, because there's always a lot more going on behind the scenes that like even regular person or like it's someone who's deeply connected knows about. So hopefully hopefully things are going in the right direction for these players, though, because they deserve it. Like, they became the first Caribbean nation, men's or women's, to make it to round 16 in a women's or men's World Cup. Like,
with all that fuckery going on.
They're fundraising for a World Cup training camp. Like, all of these players deserve so much better.
Yeah, we'll keep following that. And if we get some news back about what actually happened or if there are concessions or what, we will absolutely report it once we have that information. Okay, let's get into some FIFA news because some things dropped. We have a couple things that are happening, decisions to be made in a meeting that's happening later because the time difference is wild. But I want to start by talking
Eastern Thursday.
When it starts. I stay up late, but I've got other things to do with my life than follow a FIFA meeting. If I'm going to be honest, I'll just wake up and see what the hell they did, which is not really something that, you know, not that my awareness of it is going to change anything, but always scary to see what FIFA decides whenever they decide to do anything. But let's talk about the one thing that they have announced and kind of have the framework of. I was going to say solidified, but that's too strong. Women's Club World Cup is apparently going to happen. It's part of the official FIFA calendar. That's very exciting. If y'all have listened to this podcast before, you have probably heard us shout about a Club World Cup for many minutes on this podcast. Apparently, it's going to be every 4 years. I don't love that. Would prefer every two, but fine. Going to be every 4 years. Going to be in January and February, starting in 2026. And there will be 16 teams participating. That's all the information we know
Literally death it. Yeah, the 2 year versus 4 year is hard because on one hand, I get it. Like, you have thinking about the next 4 years in women's football, like after really the Olympics this summer, you have essentially a free, or not a quote unquote free year, but a year without a major international tournament. Well, that's actually a lie because there's, at least out of Europe, there's the Euros. And then after that, 2026, you have kind of a free year in the lead up to the World Cup, where then you have the World Cup in 2027, then you have the following Olympics in 2028. So on one hand, I kind of get it of like, that's where you're going to fit it. On the other hand, like, I don't love that it's in January, February. I get it, right? Like, that's going to be the natural free space for any of the top clubs competing in these tournaments between, like, you know, Spain taking a winter break. We know England takes a winter break. So does Germany as well. The NWSL technically hasn't started by that point, even though the USL by that point would be in full swing because they are going to play a fall to spring calendar. But I'm assuming they have to take some sort of break around them for climate in the US. So it's like, I understand, but also at the same time, like, I do kind of wish it was something that was maybe more like June, especially if you're not going to do it on a World Cup year or an Olympics year. I kind of wish it was like something that was maybe like June-ish. Like, I just think like it's players, A, can still technically get a break over those winter periods. And then for the majority of players, if you think, you know, in Europe, in the US, they're either going to be finishing their seasons, or in the case of the NWSL, for example, they're going to be in full swing of their season. So it's just like, it would in theory be like an extra game versus doing like an extra full training camp ahead of it. So I just don't love the January, February date of it. I wish it was later.
Yeah, that one's going to be interesting. I know they want to accommodate the European teams and seasons, and really most seasons, because they do tend to follow the, like, the NWSL is really the outlier, to be honest, in most. But
and
for
then,
a
like
reason.
Australia.
Yeah. So we'll see. But it is going to be interesting, because what if you have a top team, which you would assume this is going to be, we'll see about the qualification process. But I assume it's going to be a top team, which probably means they will have gone fairly deep into the playoffs, in the NWSL playoffs, which means their season probably won't end until November. Mm-hmm. And then you get December off, and then you're right back in camp for this January, February Club World Cup. So that pretty much, and then you may get a little break, but then I'm assuming that you will have preseason start, you know, March, and then you'll get back into this to actual, you know, NWSL regular season play. So that's almost kind of year round with maybe one month off, which I don't love that from an NWSL perspective.
Well, even if you think about not just like in CONCACAF in general, like, I mean, the USLW I just said they might, may or may not, I have no idea if, like, what their calendar is going to look like. Maybe in a break at that point too, thinking about Mexico and what La Apertura, like, that is technically kind of getting started up at the same time. Like, there,
the Brazil league too. I think they have a mini like Copa tournament early in the year, but that's it. It's not like a regular season.
Yeah. So it's like, it's kind of an awkward, it's just like an awkward place to put it, as opposed to a maybe like May, June, essentially, where it's like, okay, maybe you get a week off. If you make it to the Champions League, maybe you get 2 weeks off and then you're back versus. Yet I just don't like disrupting also that, disrupting that winter break, because we know that the women's game is like growing really fast. And while that can be great in a lot of cases, it's also like, let's learn the lessons that are being taken from the men's game and fixture congestion and all of that stuff, and like use that knowledge and insight to apply it when you are growing something like the women's game. And it's like, nope, not gonna listen.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll keep track of it, obviously, and figure out exactly who's going to be in there, what the qualification process is. I will say, this is something I've been shouting for. I do think that already, even though we don't have many details, I have details that I wish were different, but I am just excited to see this thing actually happen. I have just felt that it's such a significant need, and it's such an obvious way to showcase club football across women's sport, across women's football. And I think that's what's really necessary and needed. But even beyond that, like, you know, the arguments happen online no matter what. And now we're going to find out.
All they do is argue.
Yeah, no, now we're going to see some things. It'll be very interesting to see. So I'm excited. 16 teams seems like a pretty decent number as well. So, you know, I'm largely enthused by this and would love for it to start soon. But I'm also like, January, February. God damn it.
And fine. 2 years from now, too.
Or yeah, and 2 years. Well, year and a half.
Yeah, year and a half.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about some other FIFA stuff. Let's save the good one for last. Well, we'll say a potential good one for last. And let's talk about the Zambia suspension. FIFA apparently in this meeting is going to decide whether they are going to officially suspend Zambian teams from competing. So that would directly interfere with the Zambia women's team going to the Olympics, which is mm-hmm. just in a couple months, which is really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It will also impact, I believe, when I was reading a piece in The Athletic, the men's team, their appearance in, I think, World Cup qualifiers, I believe, or and then the women's senior team in the women's AFCON, and also an under 17 team's appearance as well. So
yeah, so for those for those who don't know, the way this expulsion is, or this potential expulsion or threat of expulsion is working, if it goes through, it affects all Zambian national teams from the senior level through to the youth levels from competing in international tournaments. And it's like, it's right now, it's unfortunately just like the luck of the draw that the Olympics are coming up on, and the Zambian women's national team made it, because like, let's say this happened in September and they were threatening this, like, yes, it would affect probably their international windows, but like the women, for example, like would not be the first team affected because it affects all the teams. It's just like the unfortunate, I don't want to call it the luck, maybe like the, what's the opposite of luck? The like the not lucky aspect of it. The misfortune of like, oh, it's the Olympics are coming up and it would affect the team. And we will learn about that Thursday evening, because so basically there's, you know, the big FIFA meeting. And so that's one of the topics on their agenda that they've publicized. And I mean, obviously I really hope it doesn't happen. It's like, that sucks for everyone involved. Like the players working so hard, like being able to, you know, if you make that Olympic roster, you go to the Olympics, you're an Olympian. Like, I know we love footy, but like saying you're an Olympian is like just a different level to virtually everyone in the entire world. Like no matter where you go, if you talk about the Olympics, like people immediately know what that is and kind of recognize it. And so it's deeply unfortunate. I really hope it doesn't happen. I hope they are able to come to some sort of a conclusion or like agreement. Because all this was basically wrapped up in, I believe, what was it, insider trading?
Yeah, that was so it was weird. It was like, apparently there was some third-party influence within the Federation.
Yeah, that's what they officially announced it as.
Yeah, that's like the official thing. But then there's also, when you dig deeper, there was a canceled General Assembly meeting, which is what flagged it for FIFA, because they were like, whoa, what is this? Why are you canceling this? And then apparently internally, there's also been allegations of corruption and improper use of funds, where some funds were used from the Federation to get other people outside of the Federation. I believe they were other relatives or whatever, don't know for sure, but looked like it was somebody, it was not people who were working with the Federation or for the Zambian FAS, Football Association of Zambia, to get to the men's AFCON tournament in the Ivory Coast this past, it was just a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Or a few months ago. So apparently there was some money there, and that's why, like, apparently there were some arrests made, and so they canceled that General Assembly meeting. Like, whoa, it's kind of hot right now, and FIFA was like, hold on a second, we don't like this.
Yeah, sorry. So I can explain it. I finally found, I had notes on it from, like, 3 weeks ago when this went down. So it was that the president and the general secretary of the Zambian Football Federation were arrested and charged with money laundering. As a result, because they were arrested, Zambia's high court, like their supreme court essentially, prevented the Zambia, like their footballing body, from having their general meeting, which is what raised it to FIFA of like, whoa, what's going on, which then started this snowball. And it's 100% of what Andre was saying, that like with this money laundering, it was semi or like at least reportedly related to the men's AFCON and some flights, and kind of, you know, moving money around. And because their high court prevented that annual general meeting, FIFA considers that court injunction in the form of, quote, undue influence by third parties, which is how they're now getting the FIFA, or threatened to be exposed by FIFA. So yes, that is a long and confusing way of saying, basically, it wasn't like FIFA just kind of came in and stepped in. There was like, it was kind of like a snowball movement of that. And the unfortunate bit about this is that if Zambia do get suspended, we actually don't know what would happen with the Olympics.
Like, yeah. Yep.
Would Morocco, for example, take their place, which I don't Please, necessarily don't, like. Don't.
Let's not have
not for not for the Moroccan players before their coach.
Yeah,
deeply unserious.
Well, I cannot believe they hired that dude. Just such a stupid decision.
Even though on the flip side, I also wonder, like, this isn't the same case at all. But with all the stuff with doping and Russia, the athletes were allowed to compete, just not under the Russian flag.
So
I was like, would they be able to do that?
Yeah, so this is my thing. If you're going to punish a federation, punish the federation. Don't punish the players. And yes, the players and their performance, and you know, they get money from you know, having qualified and depending on how far they advance and all of that. Yes, like that's how the federation gets money. But FIFA can, if they are organized and do something that is like logical, they can still have the team go, whatever money is withheld from the federation. You know, you pay the players and then you withhold the money from the federation until they figure their shit out. It shouldn't be that difficult to figure out how to not impact all of these players. I mean, we're talking about the women's team in an Olympics, which comes around again every 4 years. So this is very, very rare. And it's a great experience. And think about, like, right now as we sit, what is it, mid-May? And they have no idea whether they're going to Paris or not. And that's just really shitty. So I always hate when higher up people have such an issue of corruption. And the way that you punish that is by punishing people who had nothing to do with it. And that's what's frustrating to me. But also, I do want to note, I saw a headline today that makes this all sort of interesting from FIFA, because I saw an exclusive from Martin Ziegler, who writes for The Times.
Did I know exactly what you're talking about?
Yeah. This is a headline, and I'm just going to read this with no context, but hopefully people can put it together. Exclusive, FIFA council member dials into summit dash from prison. Just gonna throw that out there.
Just marinate on that. Marinate on that.
Yep.
Marinate on
that. On the governing body of football, and apparently going to levy this punishment, or choose whether to levy this punishment. One of the dudes will be in the room on Zoom from behind bars. Just throw that out there. Just think about it.
Yeah, that's some chaos right there. That's some true chaos.
It sure is. Okay, let's talk about the World Cup because we kind of have, well, we do have two competing bids now, with the U.S. and Mexico bid dropping out. This is for the 2027 Women's World Cup. This is apparently the other thing that will be decided in these meetings, is trying to figure out whomst is going to host. So I'm going to read what Courtney has written in the rundown exactly as it is.
Don't get me canceled.
I will not. I won't get you canceled. But I'm trying to remember what exactly it was. So it was Brazil with one, and then it was a combined one. What was it? Belgium,
Germany, and Netherlands.
Germany and Netherlands. Okay. So yes, Belgium, Germany, and Netherlands, or Brazil. And FIFA did release some sort of report that talks about, you know, they score all of the bids and all of that business. People who are blessed and highly favored did all the parsing through of that and said that Brazil came out with the higher scores. I was like, thank you very much. I was not going to read that entire document. But it seems like Brazil has a very good chance to host the 2027 Women's World Cup.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, because I did do some reading on this, the way they, like, before that, actually vote on the bids, and I believe this is the first time that they're going to, like, essentially vote live on the bid, and you can, like, see it in real time.
You can see the bribes exchanging hands in real time.
But they, before they, like, all these bids go to get voted on, they basically score them and rank them on, like, a whole host of different criteria, and Brazil's, I believe, was like 4.0 out of 5. And then the joint bid between Belgium, the Netherlands, and Germany is like 3.7 out of 5, which is why people are like, it's likely that Brazil will get it. I hope that happens for my sake, and all for all the people who want that to go to Brazil. Also, so we can just get Ambassador Marta, which
she deserves.
I personally think you should make a special rule to let her come back for one match. Just add on 24. The other team can do it too. And it's just a special bid where she can come on for one match. And she comes on in like the 85th minute, jogs around, has a good time, gets the standing ovation that she deserves.
It's like they
actually
do that
for Cristiani and Formiga too. Add those two.
Don't we do that in like men's sports here? In what was it, NFL and NBA, where somebody will sign like a one-day contract?
Yes, so they can retire at the team they want.
Yeah.
And it's very nice. And I think that should happen for Marta, but also Cristiani and Formiga as well. I think they should all really get the love and shine that they deserve. So just like let it happen for one day, like literally one match. And it's just like, this is a special injunction for this one match.
Brought out
and
injunction.
That's it. And it's just like, let it happen. Because, it would be great if it goes to Brazil. And then we can all go get the best recommendations from our favorite Brazilian, Georgia.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Brazil and really hoping that they win the bid. I don't love multi. I get why they do it, but I don't love multi-country bids. There's just a lot of travel. There's a lot of logistics that make it hard as fans going. And I just think that Brazil women's football in particular. I mean, if you think back to 2019, that speech from Marta post game is just absolutely iconic. And every time you watch that, you can't help but feel it. And like, I would just love for them to be able to like, kind of like what Australia had, you know, Australia had that big boom and then there was so much support and then they had put on the World Cup and it was, I mean, when Sam Kerr scored that banger against England, like tectonic plates shifted.
I swear I had hearing. My watch, when I'm in a loud environment, if for those who have Apple Watch, you know, the little notification you get when you're like, hey girl, it's real loud where you are. That's what happened. That is genuinely, and look, I've actually been too many a sold out stadium and a big moment for women's football. I feel quite lucky. I went to Wembley when England won the Euros. I've been to the World Cup, like, you know, went to a lot of Australia games. The noise that went off when Sam Kerr scored that goal is noise like I've never heard before in my entire life. And look, I was at a sold out Wembley when Chloe Kelly scored that winning goal. That had, I'm not joking, nothing on it. The noise that went off when Sam Kerr scored that goal. Like, I'm getting goosebumps right now remembering it. I've never heard noise like that in my entire life. And my watch was like, hey, girl, what's going on? You're in a real location.
I love that your watch is looking out for you. As if you don't know. It's like, oh, it's loud here. Interesting.
I know. Sometimes it's just if I put my hand under a hand dryer, it's like, oh my God, it's so loud. Like, be concerned for your ears. And I'm like, it's 20 seconds. But that, it was
can
like,
you calm down. You're on my wrist.
So I know. It was like, hey, girl, it's really loud where you are. You should be really concerned for your hearing.
Yeah, I really think that something like that could happen for Brazil and should happen. I mean, we've seen Brazilian players just kind of grow in stature throughout women's football. And, you know, when Marta laid down that gauntlet in 2019, it seems like a lot of players responded. And I just feels like they're the next country that's like really ready to just like blow up and be there. And like in the final end of like international tournaments, they just kind of really just need that last little like push to show people like we can support this. We have this, like our players are ballers. Like they just deserve to have that there. And I'm excited. I want them to get it really, really badly. And I think in terms of like what it will do for the global prospect of women's football worldwide, because I still do think that like some domestic leagues need some help. The Brazil league kind of could use some more eyes, some more, you know, help with recognition and awareness as well. So like, I'm excited to see see Brazil get this, and I really hope they do for all of those reasons.
Yeah, and for our friend Jake naming different countries iterations of Germany.
Swamp Germany.
There's Swamp Germany. There's French Germany. Is that what Belgium is? Is Belgium French Germany? Oh no, I think they named it. I can't say what they did name it because that will probably start an international incident.
You're snitching.
No, I mean, Swamp Germany is, you've seen it on Twitter. It's funny regardless.
It is very funny.
But yeah, I just think also for the growth of women's football, and that's not saying that like in the Netherlands and in especially like Belgium, they don't need also growing, but I just think we know that like football culture, like football runs so deep in the culture of Brazil, and to have the women's game just be shown in that light, like it sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, ready to talk NWSL?
Let's do it.
All right, NWSL news. I see you snuck in here a little nugget at the top for I suppose me to talk about.
But I
don't. Well, it says Spirit up to third.
They are up to third.
I mean, yes, they are. But I also feel like that. Thank you. Quavathun is balling. Like
LaCroix is balling.
I'm very excited. I'm also nervous, but I'm very excited. But I also think that for me, clearly and quite obviously, the story's above them. You know, Orlando.
Oh, I was like above. I thought you meant organizationally, like there's something above the team. And I was like, is this something with Michelle Kang? Is he going somewhere else with this? Like Don Scott taking it? I was like, where is he going? Above?
No, literally above on the table. Orlando and Kansas City, I think. I do want to say before we don't have this as a bullet point to discuss. I do think we should get into it in a future episode though, but a lot of people are doing the thing where they're like, oh, this is all Barbara Banda. Or they're like, oh, Orlando came out of nowhere. And I just want to say, if you listen to Shea Butter FC, if you listen to us, you knew Orlando been cooking. And
this is going to be a
problem very, very soon. And here they are. So, like, I am loving this. What I really like about Orlando is, like, look, for me, their flexibility. They are always doing something somewhat interesting tactically. Like Emily Sams was kind of playing a right back because they were doing this like inverted.
I was like, what is going on here? It was wild.
They were doing this like lopsided back three and kind of it was shifting. So she ended up getting an assist because she was up high and attacking and she got an assist to Barbara Banda. But
like
they're doing some really funky and cool stuff with their players. And it's like it feels like Seb Hines just has such a good grasp of the players that he has and what they're capable of. And like we're starting to see Summer Yates come into her own. Like I love that draft pick. Took her a season to get into it, but now she's balling. She's looking good. They made smart signings. We always talk about Orlando De Janeiro, right? So like they've been fun, and it's not just Barbara Banda, but adding her takes them to another level. And like, yeah, this team is legit. That for me, this isn't just a hot start. This team is legit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's also why we weren't so harsh on them in the beginning of the season to be fair, also at that time you knew Barbara Banda was coming. It was just a question of when, which is also why I tweeted congratulations to everyone who played Orlando before Barbara Banda. You just got the luck of the draw.
Right.
I completely agree. Like everything Orlando, if you've been watching Orlando over the last two seasons and even thinking about back to last season where they missed a playoff by essentially a goal, or maybe two goals. They ended the season in seventh. And they were, to be fair, tied on points with Gotham. They just, because they had a worse goal differential, Gotham gets through, Orlando does not. But you could see the run that they were on towards the end of last season where it was like a lot of things were really starting to work for them on the field, even though it wasn't perfect at times. And then you see this really smart off-season acquisitions, even though they, you know, Summer Yates has been playing really, really well, but also I want to give, getting Morgan Cattraw really, really smart.
Real smart.
Angelina has been balling. She's, like, really picked up my eye obviously before she got hurt, but, like, every time she's played, it's been really, really good. Getting Morgan Cattraw, also huge for them. And I just think the acquisitions they've been making, obviously getting a Barbara Banda is huge. Honestly, they're a fun team to watch. They're rarely, if ever, boring. But Barbara Banda does take them to a new level. And, like, you could tell also when they were not playing with her, it's like you can tell this system, while flexible, is kind of being made up where, like, she is going to be the centerpiece of all of the things you are trying to do. And, man, is she fun to watch. She is an absolute menace. Like, the work – and I will say – I will give a few props to Bayo's two center backs and Kayla Sharples and Emily Menges, because they were
Kayla Sharples.
I was like, Kayla Sharples was on top of it that match, but I was like, you can just see how much of a menace she is, and it's like,
see,
and
that,
like
that's what it takes.
Yeah, it's like that's what it, like she was basically double teamed at all times. But I think like her, but for Bandit's like combination with Ali Watt, she's helping Ali Watt hit new level, like a new height. Shout out, I guess, to the off season training for a player like Ali Watt, because I think she's been, especially since Banda has come in, she has been absolutely electric. It's like, oh, you want to chase down Barbara Banda? Okay, go put two players on her. Oh no, Ali Watt is wide open somewhere else. Like what? So yeah, I think Orlando, especially as we've seen, not necessarily KC deal with injuries, but maybe KC score a singular goal and be maybe a bit unable to score a secondary goal, either if that's a result of goalkeeping heroics from the other side or maybe just like kind of being a little bit unlucky in front of net. Like, to me, Orlando 100% is the team to beat, because they're good defensively, their midfield is solid, they're very fun going forward, and then when you have a talismanic striker like Barbara Banda who can just hit you also out of nowhere. Like, genuinely out of nowhere. You think, like, oh, they're doing... Like, before that, she got that penalty. I was like, oh, they're doing pretty well defending Barbara Banda. And then, boom, out of nowhere, she wins a penalty. Like, absolutely fantastic. And then you have Adriana. We haven't even talked about it. Also,
I was going to say, and she hasn't even gotten started, but we know she can play at an MVP level. She was absolutely an MVP snub last season. So, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got a lot. The one thing that I think... Yes, Barbara Banda, like, should get a ton of the credit. Like, she has hit this league like a straight-up, like, asteroid. Like, she's completely just changed the landscape of the league, which is great. But I also think that Orlando's defense needs a lot of credit, because there are only three teams who are conceding an XG per 90 below one goal, 1.0. Only three teams. Louisville, interesting. Washington Spirit, interesting. And Orlando. And Orlando isn't just below 1.0 XG, it's 0.68.
I do 100% want to give props to their defense, because Emily Sams has been very good. Even when they were missing Raffaele, they were still very solid defensively. I do have a question or two about their goalkeeping.
Yes.
The only question I have about Orlando, and unfortunately, probably their weakest link, which is deeply unfortunate. But I think actually, yeah, now that Raffaele is back and Emily Sams is back as well. Honestly, I wanted to give props to Kylie Strom at the end of last season, because I thought she had an absolutely fantastic season, just kind of went under the radar.
Strom and Abello, ballers.
I was like, look, Seb's cooking. Seb's at the wheel. Seb's growing. I'm trying to think of an oral.
Oh, wow.
Florida Seb's oranges. Seb's is bearing fruit. Seb's is riding an alligator.
They're getting worse. I need to move on.
Seb is doing some things.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
All the Florida things I thought about oranges and alligators.
I mean, not wrong, but now I'm gonna have some unfortunate visuals in my head.
I have it.
Oh god. No,
I got it.
Okay.
Oh wait, no. Oh my god, I lost it. No, wait. It's the fruits of your labor are like coming through. That's what you know what phrase I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I almost had it.
Workshop it. let us know what you come up with. They've been great. What else should we talk about? I mean, obviously Kansas City's up there, basically because they score a shit ton of goals. Even though they're tied on points with Orlando, they are on the top of the table because they score a ton of goals.
Biazonarato has fully changed their offense.
It absolutely has.
Where's Kristen Hamilton? Has she gone missing?
Good question. Yeah.
Where is she? I get it. Look, I get it. When you have Biazonarato and Tomo Chiwenga, they're two absolutely fantastic forwards. And they, like, I get it. However, when one of them is injured, I'm like, where is one Kristen Hamilton? We literally saw her for a moment in their season opener, and then she has disappeared.
Yeah. And you know, the goal difference, like, Kansas City, I'm looking at the table right now. They've scored 22 goals. And Orlando has scored 15. The Spirit scored 18. The Thorns have 21, so they're just a goal behind. We'll probably talk about them in a second. But I think it's in the defensive aspect of it. Goals against, the Current have 12 goals against, and the Pride only has 7. But other teams like the Spirit have 12, Red Stars have 12, North Carolina has 11. So they're not like letting in an outrageous number of goals, but it is something to keep an eye on, particularly like you said, if they can't figure out, if they have an injury, you know, be it doesn't come back or she comes back and it's not quite the same, or, you know, they need an adjustment maybe mid-season or something like that. It is something worth keeping an eye on. But honestly, they've been balling. And yes, Bia Zanerato been balling. Timma Chiwenga been balling. Vanessa DiBernardo been balling. But Claire Hutton, I did not see this coming. She has been great. Very young and at that position, at the six, for a team that is that, like, attacking, like, forward and you know, kind of, it's difficult to attack them on the counter, like, once you get the ball, because they are so terrifying and they stretch you so much. But still, that is quite the job that she has, and she's been very good this season.
Yeah, she has been. I also feel like part of that is partially because she's young and they know that they need, like, a just an absolute engine room in there to kind of support all the things they're doing.
Just a runner.
Yeah, like they just need so they also just partially need someone to cover like lots and lots of ground. Even though, yeah, we've seen, we have seen what it's like, for example, for Vlaco in a club environment where he can actually spend lots of time with the players and be like, oh, here are the things I want to do.
Feels like that man is on a mission. Like everybody called him boring and defensive football, and he's like, how about this? And I'm just like, we ain't forgot your movies.
How about attacks? Attacks only. And honestly, the thing about Kansas City, which is the craziest part, is they've been doing this also without Dabinia for the majority of it. Like, Dabinia just came back, I think, in the 60th or 67th or 9th minute last match. And then we all saw her pick up that injury in their first match. But doing this without Dabinia, I will say, that's crazy. Even though I will say, sometimes their defense can be a little sus.
Just a little sus.
Andre, another question. So there are two teams. Oh, I don't know if you saw. A one Naomi Girma and a one Abby Dahlkemper should be returning for San Diego.
Good.
To be fair, this was a question about Gotham versus San Diego of will they score multiple goals? But honestly, it's still kind of a question. I think San Diego will stop conceding as many goals.
Yes.
But will either of those teams start scoring more goals? Because the weird thing is they do fun things going forward. Like an Ella Stevens into the Gotham side, which I think has been a fully underrated signing.
That goal she scored.
Banger!
Oh.
Bangers only!
Oh my God. That
bangers
goal,
only.
I love that kind of goal. It's just so good.
It is
so
such
good.
It is such a nice goal. And also I think also really well deserved. I think there have been times, like, I think once or twice either someone like took a ball from in front of her, scored, or like her goal got saved off the line. But yeah, that's the weird thing about Gotham and San Diego is while they, to me, even though like spiritually kind of play as different teams, like Gotham is so highly possessive, they do want to go forward. Sometimes they will try to pass the ball into the net, which if you see like an Alice Stevens was like, I'm just putting my foot through the ball and see what happens. And I'm like, that's the way you got to go. Versus I will say San Diego has, especially in the absence of Alex Morgan, has just become the Jaden Shaw show, which is a very, very fun show to watch and enjoy and bear witness to. However, neither team can score more than one goal in a match.
I have some thoughts about Casey Stoney and Jaden Shaw.
Okay, let me finish getting my Gotham thoughts out, and then I will send those thoughts to you. Another thing about Gotham. People surprised about Anne Katrin Berger. You shouldn't be.
No.
She, if there's like an OG octopus, several octopi and trench coat keeper, that's a one Anne Katrin Berger. You should not be. Look, that save on Maria Sanchez's, that free kick, I was like, I mean, obviously I was like, whoa, but also in the back of my brain, I was like, I'm not surprised by this at all. I've seen her do absolutely wild things in goal that like break your brain routinely.
And I feel like her distribution has really helped Gotham build up, like start attacks where they can start them from a higher position up the pitch, which is really beneficial to them in the way that they play.
I agree, even though I know North Carolina, not to go, let's go on this tangent with me and my brain. When they played North Carolina did make a smart tactical change of forcing Berger to go long And they basically, like, when Lynn Williams, because at first it was Lynn Williams versus Ryan Williams, which was really funny. Of like, it's Williams on Williams. But then when Lynn Williams went to the other side of the pitch, Ryan Williams was able to tuck into a space that Gotham kept trying to play the ball. So then they were forcing Ann Katchenberger to go over the top, which sometimes they would win it, and then sometimes they wouldn't, and they would be able to, like, create a high turnover to then go forward and were unable to kind of capitalize on it. But that was an underrated thing that I wanted to point out that I didn't see a lot of people pointing out, of, like, North Carolina trying to win really, really high turnovers in their game against Gotham, but then were, like, kind of unable to kind of get anything from it. But I will say Ann Katchenberger's distribution is, I mean, to me, besides her shot, obvious shot-stopping ability, is, to me, is also a really big reason why they signed her. Because you can just see it in, like, the way that they play. And also, one thing that I've heard talking to players is, like, they're like, she's such an incredible goalkeeper that, like, it also will make us better finishers in the end because she's so hard to score on. And I was like, AKB, ballin'. Am I surprised? No. Like, I'm genuinely not surprised because we are Chelsea fans. I've watched her for like 6 years. Just pull off some absolutely like insane saves. Like, I think about that, which it was either save on Man City or a save on like Bayern.
Against Manchester City. Well, she had one against both, but it was, yeah. I think the one you might be thinking about was just that wild Manchester City save.
Yeah.
Because that reaction was outrageous. That should have been a goal. Like, I wish I had the XG number on that shot because it absolutely should have been a goal. There's no reason she should have saved that.
Yeah. But she just pulls off, like, almost brain-breaking saves every single week. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that she's starting. Now, look, Juan Carlos could do something wild and start someone else because he's like, they're all top quality. But I also expect her to be Gotham's number one going forward. I can't lie.
Yeah. And you know, you started this off with about, you know, San Diego and Gotham and who's more likely to start scoring goals. And I say Gotham clearly.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I just think that the one is the style. Well, I mean, it obviously it's the players. And yes, San Diego has good attacking players, too. But it's just the style, the difference between how Casey Stoney wants to play and how Juan Carlos wants to play.
That's very
and
true.
Part of my frustration with Casey Stoney is that She and I get it. She's defensive and it's going to prioritize that. But what's concerning to me is that you have one of the most important and probably most uniquely gifted attackers that the U.S. has produced in Jaden Shaw. And it would be nice to see that talent cultivated instead of restricted. And it feels like it's restricted. She's been starting her as a left forward for a while. And that didn't work out very well. I mean, it did every now and then because you'd have her tuck inside. But now with Maria Sanchez there to play on that left side, she's put Jaden Shaw as the striker. And that is not Jaden Shaw's best position. Like, yes, she can score goals, but her superpower is through balls. It's getting into midfield and finding those gaps and spaces where she can beat a back line with a pass. And she is excellent at it. It is one of the most difficult things to do. And she pulls it off literally once or twice a game where she just creates a shot from midfield for somebody else, 1v1 with the goalkeeper with one pass. That is an incredibly hard thing to do, period, and an almost impossible thing to do consistently. Yet Jaden Shaw does it. And she's not put in positions to do it frequently. And that's what's frustrating me because she wants the defensive solidity of another midfielder in there. So she's playing McCaskill as the central attacking midfielder. But the problem I have is central attacking midfielder should be attacking. You're not there to defend. Like, the rest of the team defends. The rest of the midfield can be defensive in how they position themselves, rest defense, however you want to set them up to avoid stopping the counters or if the possession is lost. It happens. Like, if you have a player who's good at through balls, sometimes they won't work out. But the genius of them and the importance of that skill is that at some point she's going to crack the defense and she's going to get you an incredibly high XG chance to runners that you can get trying to test the back line. And it's frustrating to not see that be cultivated because it is such a dope and unique skill. And it is making me very angry. and again, I'm going to caveat, whom am I to question Casey Stoney? But in this instance, I see a player who is not being allowed to do the things that she is excellent at. And she's like one of the two or three players in the entire world who does that specific thing as frequently as she does it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like, it's not the same thing, but they're similar. It's like the difference between like a I'm not going to go there.
I was ready for it. I was like, ooh, this is going to be fun.
No. Well, I was just thinking about Casey Stone in the WSL with a Lauren James, or it's like, obviously Lauren James is super young, but like you could just tell she had this like innate spectacular quality about her. And then you just kind of want to suffer ball it. And it's
very
like
very similar. Yes.
Lauren James, to me, Lauren James and Jane Shaw are similar players in terms of their fun, silky, super young standout qualities. Like also at the same time, they don't function at all the same in their teams, but at the same time, like, you know, you're kind of wanting to almost like put like maybe like guardrails on these young players. And like, in one sense, I get it, right? Like you don't want to put your expectations too high or anything like that, or like put them in situations they're going to fail. But also at the same time, like you just kind of got to let them cook. Like you got to let them be them. Like one thing that's so fun about Lauren James when she's fully healthy is like, she's just going to like dance around you with the ball and you're going to be annoyed and frustrated. And then she's going to like smile, wink in your face, and then like send a through ball through or score a worldie or something like that. And like Jaden Shaw can do that too, but instead we're just not necessarily seeing them play. And I'm talking about like Lauren James under Casey Stoney, not Lauren James now, kind of like be allowed to play with that freedom. And so like, I get it, especially at a time where like, you know, you do not have an Alex Morgan, you do not have a Sophia Jakobsen, who are like, whether we agree with them and how they play or not, are very clearly two centerpieces in your attack. And you have this young player that can create at times something out of nothing. And especially if you want to play in balls in behind, you have a player like Kyra Caruso, who's always going to try to run in behind, successful at it or not. And so it's like when you are struggling, I don't even mean that to be shady. I wasn't even meaning to be shady. I was thinking about just like sometimes, like when Jaden Shaw was not in the match for Seattle, for example, and like people just were not waiting their through balls well. So they're either too fast and she'd like, you know, run and hit the advertising board behind the goal, or just like wouldn't work out. But, you know, you have players who want to do that. And at a time where like the two really attacking players are not in your system because they're injured, it's like you have this player who can solve a lot of issues for you. Because at the end of the day, yes, defense wins championships, but like you also gotta win games. Like you gotta score goals, you gotta win games. Right. And so
this is kind of my frustration, I think, with the way that like Casey Stoney has used a lot of attacking banners. And honestly, it hasn't only been young attacking players. Like I had beef with her when she had Kristen Press and Tobin Heath at Manchester United. Like I was like, I think I wrote a whole piece like, here's what Kristen Press does well, put her on the left wing, let her cut inside. But she wasn't like, so there's like, it's been a consistent thing. And I think for me, if that's the way you want to coach, okay, get players who are suited to do that. Like you can have defensive forwards who are very good at doing those sorts of things. Like I think about mentioned the rain, like Veronica Latsko is one of those just very, like she ends up randomly scoring bangers, usually against San Diego, but like she's really? One of
San Diego almost only. Yeah. She loves scoring a banger against
them. She loves scoring against a banger against them, but she's, Laura Harvey trusts her because she is so good defensively as well. And I just think if you're going to build your team like that, then don't waste the talent of like elite attacking players. Get the players that actually function in your system rather than trying to get these players that are great and need the freedom to cultivate their very unique skills and then like putting clamps on them. Because Jaden Shaw should not have clamps on her. She should be able to basically do on a pitch whatever the hell she wants to do because it's worth it. She's going to create goals almost every single game because she's that good at just this game and her vision and her passing and also her understanding of space and awareness and ability to shoot. Like, she's great, but it, like, yes, learning to play within a system is important, but this just is a system that does not let her be her as much as it should. And she's a teenager and needs to kind of have those opportunities to fully develop her game. Anyway, I'm off that soapbox, but if this continues, I'm not discarding the soapbox. I may pull it back out at some point.
will say also with recruitment, it is kind of funny that almost all of San Diego's attackers are very creative, like highly creative players who like going 1v1 or getting in a through ball. Like, if you have a Jaden Shaw, you have a Maria Sanchez, even think you have an Amir Ali or an Elise Bennett. And it's like, you just wanted them to suffer ball. Why didn't you get
right
forwards who are better suffer ballers?
I just imagine them under a different coach. And like, that's a scary as hell team if the attack ever lets it like lets loose. And especially now that she has like her primary center backs are hurt and out. You right now, you just need to go score goals. Like, you're not going to be able to be super defensively solid, or if you can, it's going to be at the expense of you being able to actually score a goal and maybe even win a game. So, like, right now, would have been the time to say, all right, we got Maria Sanchez in, let's just go for it. But we're not seeing that. And whoops could have predicted.
Whoops. I mean, I really don't have a ton to say about Portland. Just that they are, what, 4 wins off the bounce or on the bounce. Really, Ken.
Coach Ken.
Coach Ken has been honestly getting them to play some really, really fun football. That that goal that Olivia Moultrie scored, I was like, I can watch that goal all day. What a banger.
That was wild.
But yeah, Sophia Smith has also been, I think the key to Rob Gale. Obviously, he had to figure out their midfield, but I think one thing he's also said is not making their attack rely so heavily on Sophia Smith, which you think would be a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing because that frees her up to then cook in the way that she wants. And you can tell she has been. Last match, she had 3 assists and a goal. Like, she has been absolutely electric for them. And yeah, they're kind of back to the Portland that no one really likes to play because they can weather the storm and then also hit you out of nowhere. And he has also found a way, I think, to get, obviously, Hina Sugita on the pitch, but I even think like a Jesse Fleming's playing a bit better. Olivia Moultrie's playing a bit better. They're Sam Coffey's. Honestly, to me, she's always played well. It's just like sometimes when 3 players want to do the same things on the pitch. But yeah, Portland's back to being Portland. And honestly, hats off to them.
You know how I said that, you know, I was recounting how many goals each team has scored so far this season. And I was like, yeah, Portland's 1 behind Kansas City with 21 goals. Kansas City has 22. And we just kind of like expect Portland to be there. You know, they have Sophia Smith, obviously. So like you just expect like, yeah, when you hear that. But did you know that? Let me do the math here. Their last 5 games, they've scored 15 goals.
I was going to say, I was like, I think they've scored 15 or 16 goals in their last 4 to 5 games. It's been absolutely wild. Really since Rob Gale took over. But I was like, they've also been scoring, like a ridiculous amount of goals in the last few matches. And Kayla, I'm not super surprised about that, but they be balling.
Yeah, and shout out to social media admin for leaning into Coach Ken. I know some people think it's Draco Malfoy and some other people like that, but nah, it's Coach Ken. It's Ken from Barbie. I don't know why his hair looks like that, but it's hilarious. I can't not see it every time they show him. And for some reason, they show him a lot. Don't really understand why he gets so much camera time, but they like to show him a lot.
That they do. Andre, something funny happened in the last match day. And it's not... Well, for some, it is funny, haha. But a 1 Paige Nielsen got her comeuppance against the team that traded her in Angel City. Can't lie, I'm deeply surprised. I'm not surprised at her getting her comeuppance. I'm deeply surprised at Houston winning.
Yeah, I was going to say Houston winning a game. Yes, that's a surprise.
That was, in fact, surprising to me. Even though I honestly deeply enjoy Fran Alonso celebrating goals. Like, you can just tell he, like, genuinely, like, likes footy. I mean, and he, like, celebrates like he scored.
his Houston Dash get them so infrequently. He has a lot of pent up energy to release once they finally score a goal.
Houston get, I want to say, one of the latest smash and grabs I've ever seen in NWSL history, and winning or getting the winning goal in the 98th minute in a match in the 8th minute of stoppage time. We need to have a longer conversation about stoppage time in this league. I've been talking about it for a long time, and people have been responding to me being like, trying to explain how stoppage time works. And I'm like, I'm not dumb. I know how it works. I've seen it deployed also in other leagues, and it doesn't look like this. How are you feeling about Angel City? How do you feel about Houston, really?
I don't feel great about either at the moment. I am sad because I thought that, you know, Becky Tweed would have the team playing better than what she's been able to accomplish. I do think that the team is obviously very young. I think they have not really settled on an identity or a way to play. I'm concerned about the midfield. I really think they're misusing Messiah Bright by not playing her at all, which is really frustrating. I think she should be starting with Sydney LaRue because one of the things Messiah Bright is excellent at is carrying the ball forward. And I think you still need a presence in between center backs, which is what Sydney LaRue can be and is really good at being. And if you have Messiah Bright carrying the ball forward, you kind of alleviate pressure on an attacking midfielder because they don't really have one outside of Kennedy Fuller, who's a teenager and trying to like figure out how to like, you know, be a professional, play in this league and all of that. She's very talented. But if you kind of look at their pass networks after games, she can kind of get sucked away from her decisions or duties as an attacking midfielder. And so I'm a little disappointed there. With Fran Alonso, I just think like he came in the league trying to do something extremely clever and forgot or didn't really like factor in the fact that it's the end of ESL. And some of your neat little, you know, mad genius tactical things are not going to function the same way because this league puts you under a lot of pressure. You don't have a lot of time to build up. And so sitting deep and inviting a lot of pressure in this league is just very silly. It's a recipe for disaster. And they were disastrous. So I am glad at Angel City they did switch it up. I think they played with their highest line and they had a high press. And I was like, hey, there you go, buddy. That's how you play in this league. Now let's see if he continues that.
I will say they now have Tarciane, which is a huge signing, which will also help bolster their defense because she's very good. But yeah, there's some questions. I want to rewatch some Angel City games to make full opinions, but I think it is a bit confusing at a time when they do need goals and it's like, you know, the 75th minute and not putting in a player like Messiah Bright who can score. But yeah, I feel like unfortunately for Angel City at times, they still kind of feel like a work in progress, which I think if you said like 3 years in when they also come in with a team like San Diego, which like, I don't necessarily think I don't think San Diego is necessarily a work in progress team. They just will suffer ball you, which is not fun to watch. But to be fair, they've also had more coaching changes too. But yeah, I don't know. It's very – I'm going to keep a lot of my Angel City opinions or the majority of them to myself while I need to – need to go back and watch more tape on them because I'm like sometimes I see things and I'm like I think about their game against Chicago. And to be fair, Chicago was Malpulis. But like Alyssa Thompson had like a really, really strong game. So you see like really bright moments. And then you also see, for example, conceding in the 8th minute of stoppage time, which, to be fair, no one has probably truly prepared for or we're not preparing for coming into this season of having such long, long, long stoppage time. And towards the end, you know, you can experience lapses in concentration. But yeah, I was like, probably some things need to happen, but I'm going to keep most of my opinions out of Angel City to myself at the moment. I only have one thought about Racing Louisville. Where is Raylan Turner? Why isn't she playing?
Yeah, that seems to be a necessity for her to be on the pitch, especially if they're going to, like, you know, score goals from not free kicks or penalties.
They're just, like, such a different team with her on the pitch. I'm like, where is she? She plays really, really well with both Kanu and Barr.
Yeah, she does. This is why it's been interesting to see her in and out of the lineup, because I'm like, it seems like whoever she plays with, she has a good relationship with. So I don't see the disconnect. It's like, well, we can't really play her. It's not really working out. Like, it looks good to me. I don't know. I'm nobody. I'm just a dude on a podcast. So, you know,
I'm just a stupid fan. Stupid fan. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's move on to talk about England.
There was an FA Cup final that was played between Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur. Manchester United won 4-0.
If the referees knew how to referee versus Chelsea, I had to get them.
This is why I was like, I'm not going to get into all of that. But
sorry,
yeah.
I had to.
Yes, it is fair. It's fair. And yes, caveat, we are both Chelsea fans. Whatever. Doesn't mean we're wrong. In the FA Cup final, Manchester United did get their first bit of silverware at the top flight. So this is an important trophy for them. Nikita Paris came off the bench in the 58th minute, I believe. This was after reports that she turned down a lucrative contract from North Carolina Courage to come because she said she wanted to play in the FA Cup final. This was a report by David Ornstein of The Athletic. And I think that's extremely funny, not just because it's the FA Cup, but also because it's the FA Cup, but also because she's won it twice before. So I didn't really understand why decided to like give up a million. It was £1 million apparently over 3 years. And I was like, you've done this before. Like, she's not a new, she's 30. She's not a new player. She's played on Arsenal. She's played for Manchester City. Like, she's won the league before. She was on the team when they won the Euros. Like, I don't really understand why this was worth £31,000 a minute, but that's what she sacrificed. And I was like, all right, I hope that substitute appearance is worth it for you. But people were sending me the photo of her posing with the trophy afterwards, and I was like, it still doesn't make it any less funny, y'all. Like, it's hilarious. She could have had a million, or she could have taken this photo with the trophy she's won twice before. I don't know. However you make decisions is how you make decisions, but that doesn't mean I can't laugh from time to time. Sometimes people make funny decisions. I can't help
it. Is she a lifelong Red Devil?
She might, maybe that would make sense. I don't know, but the fact of that it took her so long to get to Manchester United, but I guess Manchester United didn't really exist as a women's team until what was it 2018, 2019, something like that.
Because they disbanded in 2004, so yeah, never like officially affiliated with a club.
Maybe she didn't have that kind of in one of the experience. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know, but it honestly, I just laughed at that whole situation. But anyway, Manchester United does have new ownership coming in, new decision makers, Ineos, which whatever, look them up if you want, Ineos, Sir Jim Ratcliffe. He's apparently a sir, officially dubbed a sir. I'm going to just call him Jim from time to time. he didn't show up to this FA Cup final at Wembley. Instead, he decided to hang out with Old Trafford and watch Manchester United's men's team lose to Arsenal, as everybody expected them to anyway. Apparently they did send one of the Glazers, I think.
They sent a tweet saying, good luck.
They
just sent a Glazer, but really. Yeah,
they sent a Glazer. They sent a tweet, and that was kind of it. And that's really kind of shitty. I think you're kind of looking at when you have a new owner come in and, you know, he's doing all kind of weird. So I'm seeing all these, you know, fake business guy. I'm going to make decisions to like whip everybody back into shape or whatever. You know, you're seeing all these decisions like remote work is done. Like, we're going back into the office and it's just like, okay, man,
remember
whatever.
When he called them dirty because they weren't as clean as a literal chemical plant.
Yeah. It's like he's just being extremely weird. And so things that he's doing is kind of important, even if they are performative. And the fact that he didn't go to Wembley to kind of watch the first available like trophy to enter into the cabinets of Manchester United with them in charge, the fact that he decided not to be there and instead go to a regular season game, men's game, is just a really bad omen, I think, for the women's team.
Yeah, especially when you know that they canceled the postseason awards to celebrate. And they were like, well, sorry, we must focus on the FA Cup. What about celebrate? Like, apparently the youth men's team was in a cup final or won their league or whatever. The youth men team did something of not consequence. Of like, they did a good thing that should have been celebrated. The women winning their first trophy ever, especially considering they were not great in the league. Like, It's just like not great vibes. And I mean, I know people, well, I've seen a lot of tweets saying that like Chelsea's ownership should come under the same amount of scrutiny because they're offering off or want to sell a stake in Chelsea women's team, which I fully disagree with. Andre, I'm assuming you were shaking your head. Yes. That you also fully disagree with that, which I completely agree with. And if that actually happens, I'm going to call Todd Bowley myself and fight him. No. Why couldn't Mackenzie Bezos have bought the team? Anyway, conversation for another time. I just think it's like, it's not good vibes all around, especially when your women's team has, well, also thinking about like all the stuff with the women's team, especially thinking about like the fallout with like Mason Greenwood and the women's players taking the fall during the World Cup. Like, it's just not good vibes all around. And actually, I was seeing some things, and you know, at, like, we're marching into the final match day, and you know, for the like, and teams have been announcing when, like, you know, their players of the squad leaving right before their last home match. We know that Frank Kirby is leaving at Chelsea. Mara Mielda is leaving Chelsea. We know that, like, Vivian Miedema is leaving Arsenal, which we can have a conversation for another time of why I think that's a bad idea.
Can you imagine her feeling, how she must be feeling, being the one white woman that Jonas don't want?
You are about to get us some trouble. You need to leave right now. You need to leave. You're going to get us in so much trouble. I will say the vibes between the two of them have looked particularly poor. And I mean, she was at, like, I know people were like, oh, she's going to leave 2 years ago. So it's like, we're just happy that she ended up staying. But I was like, she's been at your club for 7 years. Like, they're like, it's the exact same. Like, we know that and actually, I think this is a perfect example, like Fran Kirby leaving Chelsea. And I'm pretty sure all the reporting was that, like, we knew that Chelsea wanted Fran to stay. And when you saw the reporting that Arsenal did not offer Miedema a new contract, given how long she's been there. And, like, yes, I know she's had injuries, but, like, also she's 20, 27. Me and Miedema are the same age. Like,
that's what's wild to me. So much upside. I really thought she was close to 30.
Right. Like, she has so much upside. Like, it's one thing for Fran Kirby. Fran's, I believe, is about to turn 31, which I still don't agree with Fran leaving. But it was, like, clear that it wasn't like Chelsea did not want her, that she wanted to leave. And so when you see that with Miedema, who, yes, I understand, or at least, and to be fair, this is Stan's tweeting, so we don't know how true this is, but, like, her kind of getting rushed back from knee surgery, or, like, from tearing her ACL, you know, kind of having, like, being forced to kind of have the, or not forced, but, like, she, because as a result, she's had to have these additional surgeries, kind of getting her knee back in shape, and knowing that they don't, and that they did not offer a new contract, to me, is just, like, absolutely wild, because when you get a Miedema that is 70% healthy, and this is also no shade to the other strikers on that team or the other forwards on that team, but, like, she is top quality. Like, it's like, the amount of quality she has when she is healthy is insane. And maybe if you want to talk about her showing up in big games, not whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, titles aren't won or lost in big games, as we've clearly seen this past season, or, like, trying to make a Champions League and stuff like that. Like, to me, I personally don't think it's a smart move. She might go to Manchester City for free, which is absolutely wild. Even on the purpose of just being a hater, don't let her go for free. Like, oh my God.
To that squad?
Not emboldening Gareth Taylor. But who's
currently five points above you at the table, and apparently has a chance to win a title, the league title, this last game. This is why I don't understand Jonas, because, I on one hand, I respect the confidence. But on the other hand, I'm like, yo, you just put a massive spotlight on yourself, because whatever scheme or system you think you have that's so important that you stick to that and that Miedema doesn't fit into, now you're under a microscope, my guy. Like, if this doesn't work out, everybody's going to be like, okay, you know who would have been great to have? You know who would have been a really good player to have on the pitch, who scored a ton of goals for Arsenal? Right. Yeah, that one that's maybe now playing for Manchester City. Like, good luck with that next season, buddy, if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that it's just, like, absolutely wild to me. At least, like, it's one thing if they, you know, they don't come to an agreement on the contract, but not even offer her a contract is a bit wild to me. That I have somehow gotten us fully off topic off the FA Cup. Manchester United did win. They fully crushed Tottenham. We did see Tottenham try to bounce back a little bit today versus Chelsea, even though to me that was, it's not like they had, like, the best defensive performance. It was like their goalkeeper turning up real hard and Chelsea being unable to find the back of the net.
Turns out not having a starting nine sometimes makes scoring goals difficult. And we have three nines who are injured. And that just is very annoying.
Right. Two on the equivalent of SEI. And Myra Ramirez has a hamstring injury because she gets kicked and pushed and pulled all the time. And so, hey, look, I love me some Aggie Beaver Jones, though. But she's also a young player, and putting all the pressure shouldn't be put on her.
Yes. Too soon.
Yes, but look, she's one for the future.
She's balling, though. We've needed a lot of her goals. So, like, she's doing it. She's stepping up. But it's like, this was not the plan.
That's very true. Andre, we are going long here, but wrapping up England, who's going to win the title? By the time we record next, it'll either be Chelsea or Manchester City. I think if Chelsea scored more goals against Tottenham, I would have more confidence. I hope Manchester United just really turned up during their FA Cup victory and drank like a lot of beer, a lot of champagne, and flew kites at practice. If you know if that means, you know. So Chelsea can get a resounding win. But I can't lie, I'm not super confident. I think it'd be different if City were playing like a Liverpool, even maybe like a Tottenham. But they're playing Aston Villa, who often does not spark joy. And maybe Alicia Lehmann is like, I don't like you, and is going to score a hat trick. But
listen, we are not going to pin the hopes of Chelsea's title on Alicia Lehmann. I'm not having that.
But I don't think that's going to happen. Look, I mean, I will say Rachel Daly is one for chaos.
She is. True. She's very much a chaos agent.
Who do you think is going to win?
I mean, I'm never going to say Manchester City. Like, for me, Manchester City, just like when Chelsea stumbled, Manchester City had to not stumble. And then they gave up two very late goals versus Arsenal, and it was hilarious.
That is the one thing I thank you for, Jonas, putting in Stina Blackstenius.
Yes.
That's the one thing I thank you for. I don't thank you for much else, but just that.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, right now, both teams are tied on the table. 52 points, 17 wins, one draw, three losses. That's the collective the record for both of them. So it's a 2-point gap. Chelsea have the lead. Two goals is the difference. Man, I butchered saying that, but that's the difference between the two. I agree. Had Chelsea scored another goal or two against Spurs, I'd feel a lot better. I think Manchester City can absolutely beat Aston Villa by multiple goals, and Carla Ward has already announced that she's not going to return, so that team really doesn't have a ton to play for. However, Manchester United kind of do have something to play for. Now, it's very unlikely because they would need to tie on points with Liverpool to be able to jump them to fourth, because, by the way, Manchester United are fifth in the table. That's right. Fifth in the table, with Liverpool just ahead of them. But Liverpool have 38 points. Manchester United have 35. So they really need to tie because they have a massive swing in the goal differential. They have 16. There's a 16 and Liverpool's is 4. So Liverpool can't make that up. And even if Liverpool draw, then Manchester United can't catch them. But Liverpool are playing Leicester. So you don't really think that they're going to lose that game. So Manchester United technically are going to finish fifth kind of no matter what happens. Unless Leicester do some madness versus Liverpool on the final day. But I just know they're going to love trying to like win the FA Cup and then beat Chelsea or something, or keep Chelsea from a title with a draw or whatever. And then Mark Skinner is going to be like, please give me a contract extension. And then Sir Jimothy is going to say, you know what? Yes, you deserve a 10-year extension. And maybe that's what I want. Maybe that's something that I can like, that'll be a fine consolation prize if it happens to go that way. It makes me upset and keeps Chelsea from winning a fifth straight league title. So those are my thoughts.
I'm crying at you calling him Jimothy because that's Sir Jimothy. You said Sir Jimothy. Yeah, Aston Villa are not sparking joy for me, and Manchester United does have more to play for. And I think if Lauren James tonight looked a bit healthier, I would maybe be a little bit more confident in this. But I don't know. I mean, maybe Sil. I hope and pray Silves will be their good luck charm. She will be at the match at Old Trafford.
Oh, that's right. The river. Yeah, I'm jealous.
The river of Old Trafford. I don't know if you've seen the images of the roof leaking. It's bad.
Oh, yeah. I did see that.
Jimothy. Jimothy is a hilarious name. But yeah, I'll just say I'm a little nervous going into this weekend. I was, because, and I think, like, if Myra comes back, I'm less nervous. But yeah, I just think injuries killed
Chelsea this year. So, and I know this isn't...
And, like, the lack of a nine.
Yes. Like, so, the lack but this of a is, nine. This is kind of what I was going to say. Like, yes, this is not a Chelsea podcast, so I'm sorry to people who are listening.
This is always a little bit of Chelsea.
But podcast. That's true. it's in the fine print. But, like... I'm happy with this season almost no matter what. I do wish and hope that we can get a trophy. I have hated not getting a trophy in Emma's last season. I don't think that's cool. I hate the way the second leg of the Barcelona game went, because that was bullshit and that shouldn't have happened. And so, like, yes, there's been, like, some frustrations from that perspective, but, like, this team has really embodied Emma in a number of ways. And, like, when they thought they were out of it, they just kept battling. They kept scrapping and they got the gap they needed. And they went bonkers on Bristol City. Like, they are never out of it as long as Emma is there. And so, like, I was, which, you know, question mark in the future, but for real, I was very, very kind of just happy to see the team have that moment. And I think no matter what happens on the final day, as long as, you know, like, I obviously, I don't want Manchester United to absolutely, like, to destroy them. That'll be terrible. But, like, I think that if you end up scrapping out a draw, or you win, like, 1-0 or 2-0 and Manchester City just blows Aston Villa out the water, okay, fine. You know, that shit happened. You won 4 in a row. Extremely hard to do. Trying to do 5 in a row is ridiculous. And it'll suck to go trophy-less for the first time in forever. But... you know, the shit happens sometimes, and a lot of shit has happened this season. Mind you, Sam Kerr ACL, me official ACL, Mauro Ramirez hamstring injury, and has only played three league games since being signed in January. Okay, so, like, sometimes shit happens in a game, and the way that they've gotten themselves to this position is just kind of dope and speaks to, like, the squad overall and how I think, you know, I hate to go cliche, but really how resilient they are. Like, they're chance for a reason, because when they get into these positions, they go bonkers. And we saw that they had their bonkers moment, and hopefully we have one more moment against Manchester United, but we'll see.
That is true. You also don't work with people who will immediately clown you if Chelsea does not win a trophy this year.
That is correct.
The amount of texts I've gotten, I'm just like, Courtney. But yeah, I mean, also, like, you want some sort of fairy tale. Like, you never want it to end, like, for someone like Emma Hayes, you never want it to end in a dud. Like, some sort of trophy. And it's not saying that there haven't been performances where Chelsea can really hang their hat on this season. And also, really feeling like there's a huge bias against the referees and the referees against Chelsea. Like, look, also, we could be talking about 3-0 because handball was missed, clear penalty was missed as well. I know they're trying to abolish VAR in the men's game, but I was like, look, I'm telling you, I think there are times where the women's game really does need it. Because it's like sometimes blatant stuff, but also for, like, I really think now it's like even like red card stuff where I'm like, that a certain, it's one thing if you don't get a penalty or not. There are other like red card moments where I was like, there needs to be a fixing of this, essentially is what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, obviously I hope they win because I'm a Chelsea fan. And this silly little club controls a lot of my emotions. Spoken like a true footy fan. but Andre, anything else before we head out? I don't know if we have time for Heated and Hyped.
No, we'll get back to Heated and Hyped maybe next week or something. But I honestly, I think we hit at least a couple of my Heateds anyway. So I think we're good.
You had that Casey Sony rant on your chest.
I sure did. It's been boiling. It's been just sitting there. It's just been like, it's all been on my heart. It's just like, please, please. I've been trying to say in tweets and writing. It's just like, it's not enough. I need to say this into a microphone. So thank you. And you know, appreciate y'all tolerating my ranting.
I do get that. All right. Well, I think, Andre, I think that's it. Unless you have anything else about the NWSL, WSL. The USL Super League is coming around very quickly. Players are getting signed. What's your name for DC? Sandra today called it Monuments FC, which made me cry my eyes out.
I have no idea, but I did hear that they are playing at Audi as well, which is going to be very interesting because that pitch now will take three professional soccer teams plus the football, Defenders. The American football team. So, yes. I'm not looking forward to what that pitch is going to look like next season. But okay.
How are you going to be the new Snapdragon?
Or the new Lynn Family Stadium. I don't know what the hell goes on at that stadium.
Lord have mercy.
That fucking stadium.
Someone who works at a team, I can't remember who, they replied to my tweet saying, like, I guess right now it's just tough in Louisville because it's, like, not, they don't get enough sun for the grass to grow, but also it's not, like, warm enough or something. There was, like, a legit reason why the grass is currently bad. And I'm like, that does, in fact, suck. And I don't have a solution for it. However, the pitch is also bad.
It's real bad.
And you can, like, see it from, like, a bird's eye view. I mean, I will say, even during the championship, the Spirit won, they spray painted the grass green.
They sure
because
did.
A player would slide on it, and then all of a sudden they stand up and you say, hey, your white sock looks real green. What happened? unfortunately, that pitch is not great. But you know what pitch is always great? Red Bull Arena, correct.
That is true. It is a lovely little pitch.
It's not little. That feels large. But it's always very well manicured. Shout out to the grounds team. Andre, I think that's been it.
All right. Well, you know, you must close us out in ceremonial fashion.
I feel like this push puts a lot of pressure on me each week.
It does, but you should be prepared for it. It's your thing. It's a trademark.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.